fourth canto, 12th chapter. Dhruva Maharaj goes back to Godhead. Text 41. Narada, the great sage Narada said, simply by the influence of his spiritual advancement and powerful austerity, Dhruva Maharaj, the son of Suniti, who was devoted to her husband, acquired an exalted position not possible to attain even for the so-called Vedantists or strict followers of the Vedic principles, not to speak of ordinary human beings. Please repeat after me, by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the word Vedavadina is very significant. Generally, a person who strictly follows the Vedic principles is called Vedavadi. There are also so-called Vedantists who advertise themselves as followers of the Vedanta philosophy, but who misinterpret Vedanta. The expression Vedavada Rata is also found in the Bhagavad Gita, referring to persons who are attached to the Vedas without understanding the purport of the Vedas. Such persons may go on talking about the Vedas or may execute austerities in their own way, but it is not possible for them to attain to such an exalted position as Dhruva Maharaj. As far as ordinary kings are concerned, it is not at all possible. The specific mention of kings is significant because formerly kings were also Rajarshis. For the kings were as good as great sages. Dhruva Maharaj was a king, and at the same time, he was as learned as a great sage. But without devotional service, neither a great king, a kshatriya, nor a great brahmin, strictly adhering to the Vedic principles, can be elevated to the exalted position attained by Dhruva Maharaj. Repeating the translation again. The great sage Narada said, simply by the influence of his spiritual advancement and powerful austerity, Dhruva Maharaj, the son of Suniti, who was devoted to her husband, acquired an exalted position not possible to attain even for the so-called Vedantists or strict followers of the Vedic principles, not to speak of ordinary human beings. So here we can see that how wonderful the process of devotion is. Actually, spiritual life has different stages of advancement. In the initial stage, the spiritual life, in the initial stage of spiritual life, one simply becomes a karma yogi. He acts and offers the results of his actions to the Lord, but his main objective is to enjoy this material nature, but still he becomes submissive to the Lord. Then the second stage is the stage of jnana, or platform of jnana. There one tries to acquire knowledge, and that is a very arduous process. In order to attain the absolute knowledge, they make all kinds of endeavors, perform all kinds of austerities and penances. Generally, this has been described in the Gyanakanda section of the Vedas, and that deals mainly with all kinds of austerities and penances, and finally it's the process of Ashtanga Yoga. And then beyond this Gyanakanda section is the Upasana Kanda, and this Upasana Kanda section of the Vedas give the direction of becoming a devotee of the Lord, and then ultimately one becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. The pure devotion to the Lord has been described by Rupa Goswami as Anna Bhilashita Shunnam Jnana Karmad Anavritam Anukullena Krishnanushilanam Bhaktiruttama. When one becomes free from any other motivation or any other desire, Anna Abhilasha, Abhilash means desire, Sunnam, free or devoid. When one becomes free from all desires, Jnana Karmad Anavritam, and when his activities are even devoid of tinges of jnana and karma, it's even free from the coverings of jnana and karma. And anukulleno krishnanushilano, rendering service to Krishna or accepting the activities that are favorable to Krishna consciousness. Anukullena Krishnanushilanam Bhakti Ruttama. That is the highest form of devotion. Devotion also has different stages. Devotion also can be Karma Mishra Bhakti or Jnana Mishra Bhakti. There are devotees, those who are mixed. They have their karmic desires or they have their desire for enjoyment. And then there is Jnana Mishra Bhakti. That is a devotional service mixed with the desire for liberation. But pure devotion is free from the contaminations of jnana and karma. So, Dhruva Maharaj was a very exalted devotee, and Narad Muni was glorifying Dhruva Maharaj's position, and he pointed out that at the position that Dhruva Maharaj attained, that position cannot be attained by the Vedantists, those who are involved in following the Vedic principles, those who are following the Vedic principles, or the people, those who are simply concerned about the external rituals of the Vedic scriptures, they even cannot attain this position. That is, some people we see that sometimes some people appears to be a great scholar, seems to be very, very learned. Now, Prabhupada pointed out about them that Vedavada Ratha, that they are simply concerned about the interpretation of the Vedas, and without proper understanding of the Vedic injunctions. Actually, all the Vedas are pointing out one thing only. Vedaishcha sarvair ahameva vedya. Krishna has described in Bhagavad Gita that all the Vedas have only one purpose, and that is to reveal the identity of Krishna. The Vedas do not have any other objective. The Vedas' only objective is to reveal the identity of Krishna. Vedaishta sarvair ahameva vedya. Krishna pointed out that in all the Vedas, I alone am to be known. And actually, this word Veda is coming from the root word vid, which means to know. And Veda means knowledge. So knowledge about what? Knowledge about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His nature and His potencies is called the Vedas. Now some people, they simply get caught up with just the ritualistic activities of the Vedas, or some people get caught up with the different energies of the Lord that has been described in the Vedas. But only the real knower of the Vedas understand that the purpose of the Vedas is to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So, apparently those who are involved in Vedic activities or following the Vedic rituals, they are not actually very elevated. They may be very learned scholars, but they are not elevated as far as their spiritual elevation is concerned. But at the same time, if somebody becomes a devotee, and apparently, he may not even follow those Vedic injunctions very strictly, but it is to be understood that he is the real follower of the Vedas. And that's what has been given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the essence of the Vedic knowledge. Anarpito Chorin Chirat Korunaya Bhutirino Kalu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in this age of Kali to give the treasure that has never been given before, anarpita, that has never been given before. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to offer the degraded, conditioned living entities of this age of Kali. And what is that? Samarpayitu munnato jala rasan sabhakti sriyam. To offer the devotional service to Krishna. Shabhakti, actually it is, he is Krishna himself. So his own devotional service. And in the most brilliant and in the most elevated mellow. A devotional service, pure devotional service can be of different mellows also. There may be pure devotional service in the mellow of neutrality. Not exactly neutrality. Devotion, pure devotion is not in the mellow of neutrality. Servitorship, it actually begins with servitorship. So somebody may be connected to Krishna in the mellow of servitorship. Somebody may be related to Krishna in the pure devotion, in the mellow of friendship. Somebody may be related in the mellow of parental, and some are related in the mellow of conjugal. So, conjugal mellow, madhurya rasa, has been considered to be the most elevated of all the mellows. So that has been offered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not only gave us the pure devotion, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us the devotion in the most elevated mellow. Samarpayitum, samarpan means to offer. And samarpayitum means to offer. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to offer what? Unnato ujjalo rasam. Unnato means most elevated. And ujjalo means most brilliant. So this, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered is the most brilliant and most elevated form of devotion to Krishna. Unnato ujjalo rasam, sabhakti sriyam, hari purata sundaro duti kadambo sandipito, sada hridaya kandare, Sphuratu Bhashachi Nandana. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Hari, who is actually darkish, Krishna's complexion is like the monsoon cloud. Hari Purata Sundara Duti, but now he has appeared with a golden complexion. That same Supreme Personality, Hari, has appeared with a molten golden complexion. Kadambo sandipito sada hridaya kandare sphuratu bhashachi nandana. Let that son of Mother Sachi, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, become manifest in our heart all the time. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to offer the most elevated of all the mellows, the most precious form of devotional service. Actually, what has been described here, Dhruva Maharaj, Narad Muni is comparing, or Narad Muni is describing, that Dhruva Maharaj's accomplishment of devotional accomplishment was very, very elevated. very elevated. And he is telling that the people, those who are engaged in the Vedic ritualistic activities and those who are very much involved in following the Vedas, even they cannot attain what Dhruva Maharaj attained. The position that Dhruva Maharaj attained is impossible even for the Vedantis. But compared to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's gift, even what Dhruva Maharaj attained becomes insignificant. Because Mahaprabhu came and offered the most elevated of devotional service, that is, devotional service in Vrindavan. In the spiritual sky also, there are different grades of elevation that has been described by Sanatana Goswami in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that how there are different elevation. He's saying that beyond this material nature is Brahma Jyoti, and beyond Brahma Jyoti is the abode of Lord Shiva. Beyond the abode of Lord Shiva is Vaikuntha. That also has been described in Brahma Samhita, that Goloko Namni Nijodhamni Talecha Tasya Devi Mahesha Haridhamo Teshu Teshu. Beyond Golok, gradually there are Haridham, that is abode of Lord Hari, Vaikuntha, and beyond that, Mahesh Dham, abode of Lord Shiva, and then beyond or below that is the abode of Devi or Maya, that is this material nature. This material nature is the abode or the place of Mahamaya. So Devi, Mahesha, Devidham, Mahirdham, and beyond that is Haridhama Teshu Teshu. But they are all below the Golok Vrindavan. And Sanatana Goswami further described that beyond Vaikuntha is actually Ayodhya. Above Vaikuntha is Ayodhya. Above Ayodhya is Dwarka. Above Dwarka is Mathura. And ultimately the topmost region is Golok Vrindavan. And actually Golok has two chambers. One is Golok Vrindavan and the other chamber is Navadvip. These two, and there Krishna's pastimes and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes are going on simultaneously. Now Krishna's pastimes, in his pastimes in Vrindavan, Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is enjoying the love of Godhead, enjoying his most intimate dealings with his most intimate devotees. That is Vrindavan. And in Navadvip, the same Krishna, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is distributing that Krishna prema. In Vrindavan, Krishna is enjoying Krishna prema, and in Navadvip, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is distributing Krishna prema. So that is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's identity has been revealed, and that is the most wonderful, the most elevated of all the manifestations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That Krishna, as the Supreme Enjoyer, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no doubt He is the Supreme, He is the greatest. But when that Supreme Personality of Godhead comes down to distribute His love, then that is the most elevated. When Krishna Himself comes to distribute devotional service to Him, that is the most elevated aspect of the Lord. And we have been very, very fortunate to receive that. That's why Rupa Goswami pointed out that Namo Mahavadanaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. And Rupa Goswami recognizes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Krishna himself. And how does he do that? He is saying that this I worship, I offer my obeisances to the most munificent manifestation of the Lord. Namo Mahavadanaya Krishna Prema Pradayata. Why he is most munificent? Because he gives Krishna Prema. Krishna Prema, love of Godhead, cannot be attained otherwise. Krishna Prema is very, very rare. It says that even Brahma cannot get Krishna Prema. Lord Shiva cannot get Krishna Prema. What to talk about Lord Shiva? Even Lakshmi Devi cannot get Krishna Prema. And this Krishna Prema is so elevated that Krishna himself wants to enjoy it. Krishna himself wants to relish it. So that is how elevated Krishna Prema is. Actually, the form of Lord Jagannath is that. That form where Krishna himself is eager to go to Vrindavan. Krishna of Dwarka, Krishna actually left Vrindavan and went to Dwarka. He became the king. And when he became the king, Krishna was always very much eager to go back to Vrindavan. And he was so much absorbed in the mood of Vrindavan that Krishna sometimes in his sleep, he would call out his friends of Vrindavan and he would call the cows by their names. And the queens of Dwarka, they used to wonder why Krishna is so absorbed in Vrindavan. And they used to feel that although Krishna is in Dwarka, but Krishna's heart is in Vrindavan. Krishna was in Dwarka, but he was not actually in Dwarka. His heart was always in Vrindavan. And then, when he went to Kurukshetra for the solar eclipse, then the cowherd people also came from Vrindavan to Kurukshetra on that occasion of solar eclipse. So solar eclipse is considered to be a very auspicious time, and at that time people go to Kurukshetra, which is a dharma kshetra. So they also, the inhabitants of Vrindavan also went to Kurukshetra, and Krishna, the king of Dwarka, also went to Kurukshetra. And after a long, long separation, after 100 years of separation, they met again. One day, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they saw Krishna in the road. But Krishna is the king, so he was surrounded by his generals and ministers and all kinds of noble people. And he was riding on a chariot. And the cowherd people, they were staying away outside the city. They are cowherd people, so they stayed outside the city near the forest, in the outskirts of the city, in the plain land. They must have had their cows and things, so to tend their cows. And also they're poor people, apparently, poor people. So they are staying outside the city. But when they saw Krishna, they got so, love for Krishna became so intense that they completely lost themselves. And they just grabbed Krishna's chariot and began to pull Krishna's chariot to Vrindavan where they were staying. And that is the Ratha Yatra festival. And then Krishna, who in ecstasy to meet his dearmost devotees, Krishna developed this form where his hands went inside his body, his head became big and a big smile in his face. So that is Lord Jagannath. So this way we can see that this Vrindavan pastimes of Krishna is so elevated that Krishna himself desires that Krishna prema. And that's why Chaitanya Mahakrishna came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than Krishna himself. But he appeared with the mood of Radharani and with the complexion of Radharani. That also has been described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, towards the beginning, he is describing who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, and he says, Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikriti Ladini Shakti Rashmad Ekat Mano Gopi Bhubi Pura Deho Bhedam Gatauto Chaitanakhang Prakata Madhuna Taddayam Chaikam Aptam Radha Bhagod Duti Shubalitam Naomi Krishna Sarupam. That Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikriti Ladini Shakti Rashmad. That Radha and Krishna are actually one. But they became separate due to their loving exchange, or in order to experience that love in the Ladini Shakti, in his Krishna's Ladini Shakti, that is the pleasure-giving potency, is manifested as Radharani. It's actually same. Radha and Krishna are non-different. But now they have become one again. That is, Krishna again with Radharani's bhav and Radharani's complexion appeared as Radha Bhavad Duti Shubalitam. Naomi Krishna Sarupam. So that is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahi Anna. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than Radharani and Krishna together. Radha Krishna is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's why worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also non-different from worshipping Radha Krishna. When you worship Radha Krishna separately and when you worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is the same worship. Of course, these are very, very elevated philosophical understandings. But this is the mercy of the Lord that He made it possible, He revealed it to the most unqualified people of this age. Kali Yuga is the most degraded age, and in Kali Yuga, the living entities in the age of Kali are also very, very degraded, and that's why they all are very unqualified. Actually, we do not have any spiritual qualifications. We are very, very unqualified. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy has come down to pick us up. Actually, for the most degraded people, the Lord has offered His most elevated, most precious treasure. That also is another consideration that has been described, or that has been discussed by the Goswamis, that why it came down like that, why the most degraded people of this age of Kali received the most wonderful benediction of the Lord. And describing that, they are saying that Krishna is the Supreme Father, and all the living entities are His children. Now, we see that the father's love or the parent's love becomes most intensely manifest for the weakest child. The son, that is the weakest, the parents become most concerned about them. Say the little child, when becomes sick, then the parents, they stay up by his bedside all night, take all kinds of care to cure him. So the same way, when we, the weakest and the most degraded children of the Lord, are suffering in this age of Kali, then the Lord became so merciful that He offered His most precious aspect of devotion, and in order to elevate us to the highest platform. That's why, although Kali Yuga is the most degraded age, but actually Kali Yuga is the most wonderful age also. Because in this age, people can just take the shelter of the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and go back to God. not only go back to Godhead, go back to the highest region of the spiritual sky. That is the wonderful benediction of the age of Kali. And the more we discuss about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, the more we realize that how fortunate we are. And that's why in Chaitanya Charitamrita it has been said that Siddhanta Boliya Chitte Nakaro Alosh Jaha Huite Krishna Lage Shudrira Manosh. Do not just be lazy and take the conclusion that, well, yes, we accepted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving the most wonderful benediction and so on and so forth. Holy name is the easiest process of attaining pure devotional service. No, Chaitanya Charitamrita is saying that do not become lazy and just accept it as a Siddhanta. Consider why this is the most elevated thing. And then only your heart will become fixed up on that conviction. So we have to discuss more and more about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. And the more we discuss them, especially through Prabhupada's purpose in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we can see that it's so wonderful. Like never ever anyone received such benediction. That's why it has been said, Anarpita Charing Chira. Previously it was not given, but now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to offer this most wonderful benediction, and now it's our business to accept it with heartfelt gratitude for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the giver of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, Srila Prabhupada. Actually, more we become attached to them, the more we will develop our Krishna consciousness. Regarding that also, there is a very nice shloka by Prabodhananda Saraswati. Prabodhananda Saraswati was Gopal Bhatta Goswami's uncle. He's another very great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's saying, Jatha Jatha Gaura Padaru Binde Kriyeto Bhakti Kritopunja Rashi Tatha Tathut Sarpati Ridhi Akushmat Radha Padam Hojo Sudham Varashi. He's saying that as we develop, Jatha Jatha Gaura Padaru Binde Kriyeto Bhakti Kritopunja Rashi. As we develop our love, devotion, attachment to the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, accordingly, all of a sudden, once we get to realize that our heart has become inundated with the nectar that is emanating from the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. Radharani is the giver of pure devotion to Krishna, and as we develop our attachment to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then this Krishna prema as a mercy manifestation of Srimati Radharani becomes manifest in our heart. And we do not have to make any separate endeavor. Just as we develop our love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, our attachment to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, accordingly it's saying the akashmat. Akashmat means suddenly. And suddenly we see that our heart has become filled with the mercy of Srimati Radharani, that is Krishna prema. Also Prabodhananda Saraswati has another shloka, just remembered one other shloka. There he is displaying a very humble mood, which is also very important for us to understand. He is saying, Bonchitoshmi, Bonchitoshmi, Bonchitoshmi na sanshayo, Vishwa Gaura Rashe Magno Sparsham Upimang Na Bhavet. Prabodhananda Saraswati, who was such a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed in their house for 4 months.
during Chaturmas when he was traveling in South India.
He is saying that Vanchitoshmi, Vanchitoshmi, Vanchitoshmi. I have been deprived, I have been deprived, I have been deprived. The whole world has been inundated with the love of Krishna. Vishwa Gaura Roshe Magna. The whole world has been flooded with the love of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gaura Roshe. But I could not even get the touch of it. I couldn't even touch it. So that is the mood of a devotee. Devotee never feels that I have got everything. I have got it now. Now I do not have to aspire for anything else. But on the other hand, the more he becomes aware of Krishna and more he becomes Krishna conscious, more he realizes that how much he could not get. So that is the spiritual accomplishment. The spiritual accomplishment is the more we get, the more we realize how much we didn't get. That Krishna is absolute. Krishna is endless, but we are limited. So, the more we become aware of Krishna, then we do not see how much we got Krishna. But we see how much we did not get Krishna. And that actually fills our heart with a feeling, fills our heart with a feeling of what's the expression? I don't want to use the expression frustration, but something, yes. The more we feel frustrated that, oh, how much I couldn't get. So, that is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is flooding the world, and our business is to just get as much as we can. Prabhupada once gave the example of, the two examples Prabhupada gave. Prabhupada said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is like an endless ocean. You can dive deep and deep, deeper and deeper and deeper, but still you won't find the bottom of it. That is one aspect. Another aspect Prabhupada said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is like a endless sky, and we can go higher and higher and higher according to our ability, but still we won't find the end of it. regarding this one, Prabhupada gave an example once about the sky and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's love. Prabhupada said that that actually Mahaprabhu's mission is preaching mission, and everybody must preach, distribute. And it's like there are different types of birds. There are sparrows that fly around the courtyard. And there are bigger birds that fly from one continent to another continent. And there are birds that fly even from one planet to another planet. The same way, there will be different types of preachers. Some will preach around their house. Some will preach from one country to another country, and some will preach from one planet to another planet. So it is an endless sky, and one can fly as high as he can. And more we fly, the more we develop the quality to go higher and higher. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question or comments?
That in the meeting, like Guru Sitra, the rest of the development of Krishna, which is Bhakti, and then it's very symbolically they draw Krishna back to Vrindavan in the sense of. So I wonder why they call the chariot to the seashore, actually.
Oh, I see. Not seashore. You see, they are pulling from Kurukshetra to the outskirt of the city. But Jagannath Puri is the manifestation of Kurukshetra. You see that that Krishna who made the followers of Radharani in Kurukshetra, that is
Krishna in this form, Krishna with Balaram and Subhadra, that is Jagannath. Now Jagannath has appeared in Sri Kshetra or Jagannath Puri. That is on the bank of the ocean. But Kurukshetra is not on the bank of the ocean. Is that clear? That's what I thought. You see, there are, you know, Jagannath Puri is actually Vaikuntha. Right? Now, Vaikuntha appears in different parts of this earth planet for the Lord's different pastimes. So, and Jagannath Puri is actually the manifestation of the region of Vaikuntha that is beyond Dwarka, and I mean between Dwarka and Vrindavan. You see, all the places of Lord's pastimes, all the places that are known as the Dham or Tirtha, the Dham, they are actually an extension of the spiritual sky. Now, Vrindavan is Vrindavan. Navadvip is Navadvip. Right? Dwarka is Dwarka. They are actually also present in the spiritual sky. It's not that they are just some places in this earth planet. They are actually extensions of those places on the earth planet. Right? Now, the region that is between Dwarka and Vrindavan, that region is Sri Kshetra or Purushottam Kshetra. And that is Jagannath Puri on the earth planet. And there, Krishna is manifest in this form. The form that we worship with Krishna, with Balaram and Subhadra. So, and that form is that form is the form of Krishna of Dwarka, who is actually Krishna, who is aspiring to go back to Vrindavan. Krishna himself is aspiring to go back to Vrindavan. Krishna himself is craving to become united with his devotees. That's why his arms are outstretched. He's trying to embrace the devotees.
External pastime of the inserted sculpture, is there a symbolic meaning why Lord Jagannath is so handsome?
Yeah. It has been described that there's a story, well, I'll tell you the story then. In Dwarka, the queens used to wonder why Krishna's heart is always in Vrindavan. Why Krishna is always absent, right? Absent-minded, as if he is somewhere else. And also at night, he would call out the names of his friends in Vrindavan. And so the queens, they used to see that Krishna was dreaming of Vrindavan. So they used to wonder, what is there in Vrindavan that Krishna is so eager to go back to, or so why he's so obsessed. So one day they approached Mother Rohini, Balaram's mother. Because Mother Rohini also was in Vrindavan when Krishna Balaram were there. So they asked Mother Rohini. So Mother Rohini said, fine, I'll tell you about Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, but only when Krishna and Balaram are not present. Then only I'll tell you about these pastimes. So one day they thought that Krishna and Balaram were away. Krishna Balaram went to some place, and so all these queens got together with Mother Rohini, and Mother Rohini started telling Vrindavan pastimes, and they kept Subhadra outside the door. That just in case Krishna Balaram comes, Subhadra
should tell them that Krishna has come. Because if that if Krishna hears about these pastimes, he will feel very bad. So they kept Subhadra out as to guard the door and inform them as soon as Krishna and Balaram came. So Mother Rohini started to tell the story of Vrindavan pastimes and started to narrate Vrindavan pastimes. And in the meantime, Krishna and Balaram appeared there. But hearing those pastimes, Subhadra was so ecstatic that she became dumbfounded. She couldn't speak. So she tried to block the door by stretching her arms. And so that's how Krishna and Balaram were stopped from entering into the room. But Krishna and Balaram heard Rohini's description of Vrindavan pastimes. And then they became so afflicted. They were so much missing the devotees in Vrindavan and became so eager to go back to Vrindavan. In that ecstasy, Krishna and Balaram developed this form where their hands went inside, head became big. That's a kind of an ecstasy, which was which was also, in a way, displayed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he developed the Kurma Rupa. Mahaprabhu's hands and feet also went inside his body. When they found, one day Mahaprabhu was missing from his room, and Sharup Damodar, Govinda and Shankar, they kept on looking for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Others also were there, they were looking for Mahaprabhu. Then finally they found Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Goshala and in the cowshed, and there they found Mahaprabhu's hands and feet were withdrawn inside the body. And so only Krishna can display this kind of ecstasy or this kind of deformation due to ecstasy. So that is the form, actually. This also has been, it can go on for hours together if I just get into that. You see, when King Indradumna invoked, he wanted to see Nilamadhav. But Nilamadhav disappeared. The Lord, in his form as Nilamadhav, disappeared. Then he decided, then the Lord appeared in the form of Daru Brahma, as a transcendental log, came floating by the ocean. Then he was asked to, then King Indradumna tried to make a deities out of them, out of the log. But no one could even lift the thing from the ocean. Anyway, finally it was lifted by Vidyapati and Vishwavasu, the king of the Savaras and the Brahmin, the head pujari of the king. And then, where nobody could carve the deity, so finally, as soon as they touched their tools in the wood, they would break into pieces. So finally, one old man came and said that he could carve the deities out of that wood, but on one condition: for 21 days. It'll take him 21 days and no one would interrupt him, no one would enter into the room where he would be working. So he started to work, and from outside the king and other people could hear the sound of his carving. But after 14 days, the sound stopped. And so they got very worried, and finally the king entered into the room. He broke the condition, opened the door, and as soon as he opened the door, he saw that there are three unfinished forms. And the king was feeling so bad and the man was not there. So king felt that he broke the condition, that's why the man left, and the deities are incomplete. So he decided to give up his body. So he sat down to fast till death. And he fasted for 3 days, and on the third night, the Lord appeared to him in a dream and told him to worship that form. He said, you worship that form, I'll become manifest in that form, and I'll accept your worship, and don't think that this is my incomplete form. He said, I am present in Vaikuntha in this form. And that is the form where Krishna is listening to the story, pastimes of Vrindavan, and he gets into ecstasy. And he is trying to embrace all these friends of Vrindavan. Hare Krishna.
Yes.
To tell you frankly, this point we could not clarify as yet. Like in GVC we discussed in GVC meeting, but we could not come to any conclusion. But there are plenty of scriptural evidences that says that there is no need to take more than one Diksha Guru. There can be more than one Shiksha Guru. There can be many Shiksha Gurus. But generally, Diksha Guru is one. So, most probably there won't be any need to take reinitiation as such. But what has been decided in the GBC, that if somebody wants to take reinitiation from somebody, he can or she can. But there won't be any pressure or any forcing that one has to take reinitiation. That's one thing. Another thing is that one can accept a Shiksha Guru. That is advisable. Because if, but that, for that also there is no rush. Like one can see who is actually inspiring him the most in Krishna consciousness, and he can take shelter of him. And that is a Shiksha Guru. And ultimately, of course, Prabhupada is the Shiksha Guru of the society for all the time. Right? Because Prabhupada, whoever is deriving inspiration from Prabhupada's books, whoever is deriving inspiration from Prabhupada's society, and whoever is deriving inspiration from Prabhupada, the deities that Prabhupada established. So they actually, Prabhupada is their Shiksha Guru. It cannot be denied. And not only that, in ISKCON, Prabhupada is the central figure. Right? Everybody, whoever comes to ISKCON is related to Prabhupada, because Prabhupada is the founder acharya of the society. So, when some accident takes place, there is no need to feel completely, bereft of any shelter. But Prabhupada's lotus feet is always there. It's always there, and so it's like, sometimes in the family, the father dies, but his children do not become orphans and go to the street. The whole family is there to give them the protection. It's the whole family that gives the protection. Grandfather is there, uncles are there, right? So the brothers and sisters are there, the cousins are there. So this is how we are in one big family, that's ISKCON, and we are safe.
Hare Krishna.
No, I couldn't understand that point. Come again, say it again. I see. Yeah, because actually the cows in Vrindavan, they are not in neutrality. Cows in Vrindavan are actually in parental love with Krishna. Cows are like the mother, and when they see Krishna, their hearts become filled with parental love for Krishna. You see, in neutrality, there is no exchange, right? But in Vrindavan, there is always exchange. The trees and plants, as soon as they see Krishna, their hearts actually become filled with love for Krishna. So there is an exchange. So it is not neutrality, the mellow of neutrality. Sometimes it's friendship, sometimes it's servitorship, sometimes it's parental. But the central theme is conjugal, Radha Krishna. Like it is said, like what to talk about trees and plants. Even the land, even Bhumi, even the land, as Krishna states, the land begins to sway, like begins to dance, right? When Krishna jumps into Jamuna to swim, all the waves rush towards Krishna to embrace him. So that is Vrindavan. Everything is conscious. Everything is conscious in, or rather not only conscious, everything is Krishna conscious. Yes? Okay. In that, one can, Brahmin initiation is different. Like one can take, if one hasn't taken Brahmin initiation, then he can take Brahmin initiation from somebody. Like when the initiation is not there, when somebody didn't take the initiation, you know, for him there is no question of re-initiation, right? Like say if somebody is not a sannyasi, so he can take sannyas and he'll have to take sannyas from somebody, from some guru. Right? The same way, you know, like if one is not a Brahmin, if one did not get Brahmin initiation and he wants to become a Brahmin, or he wants to get Brahmin initiation, or the authority wants him to get the Brahmin initiation, then he can approach whom he feels the attachment for. Is that clear? Neutrality. You see, when the activity is not there, when the reciprocation is not there, then it is neutral, right? Somebody may be in a human body, right? But if he does not reciprocate with Krishna, but knows Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is neutrality. Like the yogis are in neutral, right? They know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they do not render devotional service, right? So even a human being can be in neutral stage, neutral love, or in the mellow of neutrality. Whereas somebody who is apparently inert, like a plant, he can be in a mellow of friendship also, or mellow of
servitorship or so on and so forth. So it's actually the body that doesn't really matter so much. It is the one's reciprocation. Like say a tree, after seeing the tree, Krishna, if the tree feels, oh, Krishna is so hungry, let me give him some food, and she produces some fruits and offers it to Krishna, right? Then it is, the mellow here is actually parental, right? Or, you know, like Jamuna is trying to embrace Krishna, the waves in Jamuna. So that is more in the mellow of friendship. Any other question? Yes, Mataji.
It's a story, I never heard a real story. I'm sure you have a real story. And it's a story about how Lord Nityananda met Lord Chaitanya.
How Nityananda met Lord Chaitanya? Nityananda Prabhu came to Navadvip and he was actually hiding. He was hiding in the house of... whose house was it? Anyway, he was hiding in the house of a devotee. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would understand that Nityananda Prabhu came. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent somebody to find out Nityananda Prabhu. But they came back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said that they couldn't find him. So Mahaprabhu sent them again, said, no, you go to his house, he is there. Then they couldn't still find Nityananda Prabhu because he was hiding, you know. And finally Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself came. And then he discovered Nityananda Prabhu. And then they met, Krishna and Balaram met again in this past time. If you want the details, maybe I can find out the details. I mean, this is the general thing that I can remember right now. There is a detailed description in Chaitanya Bhagavat. I don't have Chaitanya Bhagavat. I actually don't have any of the books with me now. Anyway, I'll remember to find that out. Why not? It depends on how one feels himself, right? That's why the GVC body decided that let it develop spontaneously, right? Not like before. Before, whenever a guru fell down or had any problem, then the others went and just, you know, forced the disciple to take the initiation. Now the GVC realizes that that was a mistake. First of all, we have to understand that we are dealing with conscious living entities, human beings, those who voluntarily accepted Krishna consciousness, right? So we should not force anyone, because, you know, devotees, you know, in spite of the problems, devotees have relationships with different individuals. So what to talk about the guru? Now, when a guru is not present in Krishna consciousness, and so if some disciple feels that he wants to take reinitiation for his advancement in Krishna consciousness, then only he can take reinitiation, and then, you know, it will depend upon him. You know, whether he wants reinitiation, from whom he wants reinitiation, and so on and so forth. But if one doesn't want to take re-diksha, one can accept somebody as a shiksha guru. And actually, shiksha guru can be many.
And especially in our society, there are many, many Shiksha Gurus. In such a big society, and senior devotees, those who are helping the junior devotees, they automatically become Shiksha Gurus. Right? Like temple president is a Shiksha Guru. Right? The Bhakta program leader is a Shiksha Guru. Right? So we have to look at it that way. Because this is the platform of love and respect. Right? It is not a platform of so much formality. It's a matter of spontaneous, you know, like, so that's why, you know, like, we have to offer respect to other senior Vaishnavas. And if we receive some, you know, Krishna consciousness from them, it is but natural that we should become grateful to them. That, oh, this devotee is so nice, he helped me so much. Like, I remember, when I joined, one, the person who helped me, or rather the persons who helped me, I still feel very grateful to them. And actually, one of them was a sannyasi who fell down. And the other was a brahmachari who was taking care of me. I was staying in the same room with him. And he was so nice. He was so nice that he would, at 3:30 when I couldn't get up, he would literally drag me out of my bed. Always very, very concerned about me. And now, but although, you see, they are having problems, but I still feel grateful because I can't forget that they helped me in my Krishna consciousness. So we should not forget the help we received from senior devotees, from the devotees, those who helped us become Krishna conscious. And, you know, like, if we become, you know, if we accept them as our Shiksha Gurus, it will help us more. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yes. Right. 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 Yeah. Yeah, we should, yeah, we should always be grateful to the people that we receive the help. What to talk about the spiritual master. You see, like Jesus said, head the sin, not the sinner. Right? See, Guru, as he helped, as a guru, when he was a guru, or when he was in Krishna consciousness, that will always be there. And, but you know, like, he had some difficulties. So now we have to say that now that he has some difficulties, he is away. But we should always feel that we have some obligation to help him. Like, if it is said in the scriptures that if the disciples become a pure devotee, then the guru goes back to Godhead. Right? So that's how we should feel. That let us become pure devotees, and no matter wherever our guru is, then he will be able to go back. Yes. No, I mean, you see, this is a very delicate issue, you know, because it's a different, as I said, in the GBC meeting, you know, we had discussed it for hours together, we couldn't come to a conclusion. Because different devotees, different GBCs, gave the different understandings, right? Now, you see, I can give you my understanding, but I don't want to impose it as a law. Of ISKCON, because you know, like, only by the GVC body it will be established as a law. So my understanding is, when the guru was in Krishna consciousness, and when the guru was helping, right?
So that aspect is always there. Right? When the Guru gave, and whatever Krishna consciousness is gave, it is eternal. Now, if he is having some problem, it is temporary. Right? And his association may influence my devotional service, that's why I'm staying away from him now. But that doesn't mean that he is gone forever. Right? So he's, you know, like someday if he becomes, in some other life, maybe it's not in this life, even in some other life, he becomes a fixed up devotee. Then, so that's why we have to understand that you know, we should take only the Krishna conscious side of it. You see, when he is Krishna, whatever Krishna consciousness I got from him, I keep it as an asset, and whatever is detrimental to Krishna consciousness, I reject. So that is the mood of a devotee. Anukulla sha sankalpa, pratikulla sha vibharjana. I was coming to that point. So you can say that, well, I was initiated by Bhagavan Prabhu, who is actually having some problem now. I mean, we are honest. Why should he hide the fact?
Of course, in Krishna, you know, always has to be good. All the truth.
Right.
But it's not an issue by Bhagavan Prabhu, who is the son of Sri Bhagavan.
Yeah. Right. Or actually, the most important thing is whether one is in ISKCON or not. You see, if one is in ISKCON, then he is safe. Right? And the initiation actually takes place on behalf of ISKCON. The Guru gives the initiation on behalf of ISKCON. Right? So actually he is linking the new devotees with the society. Right? And as long as one remains in the society, he is safe. Like, to give an example, as I was citing the example of a boat, comparing ISKCON to a boat. Right? Now, if somebody ushers you into the boat, and then if he jumps overboard, then does it mean that you also have to jump out of the boat? No. I mean, well, unfortunate that he slipped, but you must remain in the boat, right? So, and when, as long as we are in the boat, we are safe. And this boat, as I said, is being steered by Srila Prabhupada. So we are safe. And anyway, yes, you can say that. You know, I am a member of ISKCON, and Prabhupada is the founder acharya of ISKCON. Prabhupada is my guru. Yes. Although many won't agree, I know Kirtanand won't agree with that. He'll say that we are making ISKCON into a Christian church. But that's not the thing. Like, with Prabhupada and Jesus Christ, there's a difference. Right? They have deviated from Jesus' instructions. That's why Christianity is in such a bad shape. Right? But we are following Prabhupada's instructions, and as long as we follow Prabhupada's instructions, Prabhupada will always be in the center. And there is nothing to laugh about Christian church. Actually, Christian church is wonderful. But unfortunate thing is that they are not taking the instructions of Jesus. Like Prabhupada often used to point out, Jesus says, thou shalt not kill. Why are you killing? So Prabhupada said, don't break the regulative principles. So why should one break the regulative principles? Yes. He can take to the temple president. He is the Shiksha Guru. At least the GCC authorized that.
The Divyasri body unanimously agrees that the temple president is the Shiksha Guru. Because he is taking care of all the devotees. He is engaging them in Krishna service. He is directing them in Krishna consciousness. And all the senior devotees are actually gurus. Like, we do not actually have to make a superman out of a guru. Right? Actually, all the devotees are supermen. Every single devotee who accepts Krishna consciousness is a superman. He is from the spiritual sky. So why we have to put so much emphasis on but certain individual, that he is the superman and others are less superman?
Actually, this is suggestion. Prabhupada, of course, as time went on, more and more relied on the temple presidents to decide who would be qualified for initiation. And Prabhupada actually wrote a letter to the temple presidents saying that, actually I'm putting my faith and trust in your decision. And if you make a wrong decision, if you present someone for initiation who's unqualified, then you take account. So actually the temple presidents were basically holding the power to decide who is going to be initiated. I think also Bhagavan was a big deal there, that the local leader didn't want the first initiative. In fact, there's no chance.
True. Yes.
Before Dalala, GBC was taking care of so many aspects in the life of the devotees. He was the Krishna master, he involved in a lot of financial stuff. What was your vision about the GBC?
You see, what Prabhupada actually wanted, you know, Prabhupada gave a very simple structure for ISKCON. That is, there are temples, right? ISKCON temples. And temples have the devotees, and the temple is managed by the temple president. And the temple president is the responsible authority of the temple. And in an area, one GBC man was appointed where there are many temples. The GBC man's responsibility was to act as Prabhupada's secretary. Go to those. Prabhupada couldn't go to all the places himself. So they went, and their business was to see that the spiritual standard is maintained, right? Inspire the devotees to become fixed up, give them guidance, and help them preaching. That was the role of a GBC. It's not that, you know, the GBCs were the lord of that area. They're not the king of that area. That was not what Prabhupada wanted. You know, this is not a society of kings. This is actually a society of servants. Right? So, GBC goes there as a servant to act in that area, to help others, to inspire others to take to the process of Krishna consciousness, and the ones, those who have come to Krishna consciousness, see that they are maintaining the standard. You see, whenever there is a question of putting Prabhupada in the center, you know, or Prabhupada is the guru of ISKCON, you know, like Kirtanandi used to come out with a very strong, you know, argument, that is like Christians. Like Jesus Christ is the only one, and no one can be as good as Him. Right? But the thing is that, there are few things to consider in this respect. Like, if, you know, the Pope starts to preach that actually Jesus Christ is, I am as good as Jesus Christ. Right? Now Jesus Christ is gone, so now I am the one. Right? If the bishops preach the same way, now Jesus is gone, I am the one. You have to come to me and I am the representative of God. Yes, fine, they are also representative of God, but Jesus was a very special representative of God. Right? And the Christianity success depends on putting Jesus in the center. Right?
Right. Because then everybody can see that he is such a towering personality, you know, and automatically people become attracted to him. Right? So if we put Prabhupada in the center and tell people that actually this person is a pure devotee of Krishna, he came to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world according to his prediction, according to Krishna's prediction, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction, and this is his society, then automatically people will become very respectful to our society. But if I say that now Prabhupada is gone, now I am the one, then people will laugh at me and say, who is this guy? Right? So how many people I can attract? Right? How many people will be attracted to me? But millions of people will be attracted to Prabhupada. So why don't we direct them to Prabhupada? Then automatically, you say, our society will flourish. Yes, Srila
Prabhupada.
Right. Yeah, yeah, true. And also another thing is that disciple, when he becomes a guru, his business actually is to take his disciples to his spiritual master. That's how we link with the parampara. So there's nothing wrong if we say that, if we take the devotees to Prabhupada. You see, in a society like ours, we have to maintain certain standards, right? Say for instance, the standard is the standard of purity. Somebody was a guru, then he had some serious spiritual problems, he left ISKCON, then when he comes back, it is not that he will start initiating again. You see, probably he won't be allowed to, because we have to maintain a standard of purity. Like, how can we say that now he was, okay, he was falling for 6 months. Now he's all right, so he can start initiating. That was the problem with Australia. They were, you see, although the Bhavananda has serious spiritual problems, but they, you know, like, they wanted to still hold on to him. But ISKCON society is saying that fine, I mean, we are not saying that he should be out of ISKCON. He can very much be in ISKCON, but he shouldn't be in ISKCON as a guru and GBC. Right? Because we are preaching about purity. Now, if somebody becomes impure, then how can we put him in the position of leadership? Right? And actually, that's what happened. Like, that's exactly what's happened. In Australia, one temple president fell down. Right? But now he won't give up his presidentship. He says, well, the guru can fall down and remain the guru at GBC. So if I fell down, why can't I remain as a temple president? So if you allow, you know, the leaders to become impure, then the whole society will become, you know, affected by that impurity. So that's why we have to maintain a very strict principle of purity. Yes? Yeah. You see, being ISKCON means being favorable to ISKCON society. One may not live in the temple, one may live outside. One may be running his business. He may be living 300 miles away from the nearest temple. But, you know, his heart, he will be considered as an ISKCON devotee because although he is not physically present in ISKCON, but his heart is in ISKCON. So that is the criterion for being in ISKCON. But if somebody rejects ISKCON and goes somewhere else, then, you know, unless they come back to ISKCON, you know, they cannot be considered as a part of ISKCON. If they are continuing their spiritual life, that's well and good. But unfortunately, they are not ISKCON. They did not, unfortunately, they rejected Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. So maybe I stop now. Okay, Srila Prabhupada's question last. Then maybe we can have more discussions in the evening.
This has to do with the verse, actually. It's mentioned in the second Sampratidaya Panam that Jagrav Maharaj's mother was very chaste with her husband. Yet it is seen that she goes back to Godhead for her son Yuga. So my question is, what happened to her husband?
Well, he also must have gone back. I mean, if the mother goes back, if the pure devotee's mother goes back to Godhead, what do you talk about the father? And it says also, when one becomes a devotee of the Lord, and his 10 generations before and 10 generations after go back to Godhead. Right? So, obviously he was gone. But Dhruva Maharaj was concerned about his mother because of his obligation to her. That she was the one who actually inspired him on the path of devotion to Hari. So, and then he saw that she also was going ahead of him. And maybe ahead of her was his father. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.